This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Companies disgorge a pile of information when they launch a new stock, but is it the right information? Plus, later on the show, some employers say they can't find enough workers to hire who can pass a drug test. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. This morning, one of the newest companies on the stock exchange filed its first quarterly results. Blue Apron offers a subscription service. Boxes show up with the components of meals that you can whip up at home as if you were a chef. The loss was more than expected at Blue Apron. Year over year, the number of customers is up, but customer growth looked weaker during the last quarter. The stock is down 15% this morning. The stock's value is almost half what it was when it first began trading just 6 weeks ago. Marketplace regular Eric Gordon teaches business at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. Longer term, who knows, but so far Blue Apron hasn't been much of an investment, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, you buy the stock, you think you're getting in on a good thing. 5 weeks later, you've lost 40% of your money. How are you feeling?
It's true, but the prospectus on that stock never said it was a guaranteed bet and that the stock wouldn't go down. It's just, I know it's been disappointing to many.
Well, you know, stocks go up, they go down. Some IPOs have done really well, not so much Blue Apron. Remember Facebook? It was a disaster for its first year, but long term, not a bad stock.
But your sense here is that perhaps Blue Apron could have been a little bit more open to potential investors about the risks?
Blue Apron disclosed about as much as any company discloses, but they didn't make some of the really important disclosures clear. Blue Apron, they deliver boxes of ingredients, you cook it into meals. It's really important to know how much it costs Blue Apron to acquire a new customer. And it's important to know how long a customer remains a customer and keeps ordering boxes, because if it costs you $200 to acquire a new customer and you make, say, $20 profit every time they buy a box, you don't make any money until you've sold 10 boxes. And that wasn't really clear in Blue Apron's 200-plus pages of disclosures.
You might think regulators like the Securities and Exchange Commission might nudge companies like this to disclose crucial material information like that.
It turned out that some pretty important stuff was pretty unclear, and you have to wonder how many people lost money who wouldn't have lost money if the SEC had forced Blue Apron to be a little clearer.
So what, the SEC needs to do a little homework itself?
You know, I think the SEC needs to push back harder on the companies, and the SEC needs to be sure it understands some of the new business models that companies like Blue Apron and Snap and a lot of the companies that are coming out now follow. They're models that aren't like the old industrial models. So the SEC needs to push hard, and it needs to push hard on the right things, because if it pushes hard on the wrong things, the trivia, it's just back to the old company whining about too much regulation.
Eric Gordon at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business, thank you for this.
My pleasure.
Now we're going to draw a connection between the terrible scourge of substance abuse and the U.S. job market. Economist Diane Swank of DS Economics in Chicago has been reviewing data suggesting that opioid addiction, either of the prescription or non-prescription kind, has gotten to the point that it's squeezing the supply of labor in America, especially in rural areas.
One of the biggest issues is that many employers are saying they're running out of employable people to even look at on their applicants coming in, especially a big issue for rural America where we do have some factories and there's not many people in the pool to choose from, and everyone coming in is having a very hard time passing their drug test. Now, in the 1990s, the late 90s, a lot of employers overlooked positive drug tests, but when it comes to operating heavy equipment and safety concerns, you have to be really worried about someone who's on drugs while they're in the factory floor. and how they operate the machinery.
Well, I'm looking at the government's measure of unemployment, the U6. This is the so-called real unemployment rate, which says there's a lot of folks out there that could come into the labor market. You're not just speaking loosely. You've been looking at data that is suggesting the drug epidemic is restricting the supply of workers.
Absolutely. There's not only the legalized marijuana aspect, which is a different issue, the spread of prescription drugs that can affect you on a plant floor, and the usage of illegal drugs, which has hit, in terms of positive tests, a 12-year high. That's making it difficult for particularly manufacturers in these rural communities where there's a very small pool of people to pull from to get people with tests that aren't positives. It's really an issue. They're saying they don't have enough people to employ because they can't pass a drug test. And that's critical because you don't want someone who's on drugs operating machinery that could come to their harm or somebody else's harm. Another important trend is that the incidence of positive drug tests following accidents has gone up quite dramatically. And the biggest usage is not opioids. It's actually cocaine after an accident.
Economist Diane Swong tracking labor trends there. She's CEO of DS Economics in Chicago. Diane, always good to talk to you.
Thank you.
And a Netherlands-based company wants in on your cable TV and internet monthly payments. The Financial Times is reporting today that Altice, A-L-T-I-C-E, Altice, is trying to cobble together about $185 billion to buy Charter Communications in the U.S. It's not at all clear Charter would be interested in the marriage. Charter is number two U.S. cable company, 26 million customers. Charter last year was the company that bought Time Warner Cable. Altice is controlled by the French-Israeli tycoon Patrick Drahi. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.